Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. In this episode, you'll hear Melissa Locke speaking live to the Fabric community that gathered at the Hub at Urban Ventures in the center of Minneapolis for the start of our conversation, The Game of Life.
So this month we're exploring the game of life. We're talking about this game we're part of called life. And who's watching the Olympics right now? Or at least the highlights at the end of the day. How about our Minnesotan Suni Lee winning the all-around gymnastics? And then what about, to me, the gold medal for like all-around life might go to Simone Biles this year. I mean, wow, really. I think that's kind of what we're talking about, actually, is like, what would it look like to get the all-around gold medal for life? Like, honestly, I think if Jesus had an Instagram account, it would have been about that. Like, getting the all-around gold medal for life. If Jesus had an Instagram account, he'd have some followers and people following him, like maybe Buddha or Muhammad or our own photogenetic. That's an Instagram you should follow. I think, yeah, there it is. So I think Jesus would definitely follow Jeanette. If you don't, you should. So amazing. There's a thing that Jesus said about life that I think would be like the bio. I came that you might have life and have it abundantly. And I think it's that you might have life, and you, and you, and you, and all the yous out there in the world that we get to live on this planet and have this one life. And Jesus says, I want you to go for it and get the gold. Let's get the gold in this life thing. We get one, right? And how we're going to do it on Jesus' Instagram account, I think it might surprise us. It would be different from the noisy kind of typical messages we get all the time from the power brokers of this day and the constant voices, maybe even in our own heads. So that's what we're going to be looking at, is what are some deeper, truer things about this game of life that we get to play? And how can we avoid those games that we get pulled into that actually keep us from truly showing up for life? We're actually going to be talking about different aspects of this game of life question throughout the month. So I hope you can be here for those, because I think it's going to be not only fun, but it's going to turn some things upside down that need to be turned upside down in our lives and in our world. So a lot of things make that a challenge, right? Make life a challenge. And a lot of them we can't do anything about. Like, none of us are in charge of the Delta variant, right? We can't control that yet, at least. We can control, you know, a lot of other stuff. And today, what I want to focus on is one of these key ideas that we've talked about as a community on and off that is something we can choose and have some control over, and that is really helpful. And when we don't pay attention to it, it trips us up. And it's this idea of the real and the ideal. So we need both of those in our lives, right? Like, we need the reality check person or part of ourselves that says, okay, here's the real deal. This is what's really going on, the situation. And we also need like a vision of what's possible and what we're aiming for, that gold medal maybe, that aspiration, that abundant life that Jesus was pointing toward through all those stories, and that so many point us towards, and that maybe the deepest self points us toward. And so we think about, like, we have to think about the reals and the ideals, but often we go to these extremes, and one extreme we go to is this place. This was from Pearls Before Swine last weekend. It's part of a, like, comic about where our brains go at night. It was pretty funny. You should check it out. And one of the places it goes is Worryopolis. And I think Ethan's going to bring up our Worryopolis chair. Thank you. And then the other place, the other extreme is maybe could be called Blissfultopia. I liked that. And these are kind of the two ends that are in the toxic area, right? So in Worrytopia, everything is bad. Everything is terrible. And we are broken. Everything's broken. It's not a fun spot. We do a lot of unfair comparisons. Like, I don't know if some of you like had a tough morning just getting here, finding parking, and when you got here, you're like, oh my gosh, I bet all those other people just knew what was going on and were organized, and like, I'm so unorganized, and we maybe compare ourselves to all those other people here. Or maybe we think about Simone Biles, like, I'm never gonna be like her, and I should just not even try. I mean, she's amazing, and this is what we do. We look out there, and we compare ourselves to these impossible ideals. Sometimes we get embarrassed that we don't have it all together, that we're kind of messed up, and so maybe we make mistakes. We don't want people to know that, so we hide and we keep secrets. So that's this what can happen at this Worryopolis place. Does that feel like what is it like here? What are some other words that you think of? What it would feel like or what it's like there? You can throw them out. Like maybe paralyzed is one.
Sad.
Thank you.
Dark.
Agitated. Yeah. So let's talk about Blissfultopia, because this is no fun. Let's move over here. Blissfultopia. Ooh, yeah. So that's the ideal, the unhealthy ideal, where everything is awesome and things just flow and they're easy and they work. Those kids at school or on the soccer team, that they're just, dang, they are so awesome. I want to be like them, right? That older sibling who just seems so good at stuff. Those people who look so fun and happy and smart and cool on the internet out there. They always know what's up, right? It's that utopia where I always know what to do. I always feel right. I don't have like disappointments or regrets. In fact, I saw on YouTube the other day an ad that said, if I watched it, I would learn the secret to a healthy marriage forever. And it only would take 90 seconds. And your partner doesn't have to like be on board. Like, you don't need your partner. You can do it all by yourself. I was like, oh my gosh, Joe, he's in the bus. One of us should watch this, because then, you know, that person could just take care of it all, right? So we get a lot of messages like that that promise things, right? That promise this ideal state of bliss and happiness, and they're actually kind of cheap imitations or shortcuts, and yet, you know, maybe it's even things like, if I can only, like, have a night and finally get to go out and have a drink with my friends, I will feel better and be happy. Or maybe it's other chemicals that we go to, or food, or work, that sort of promise this bliss, but they're actually cheap imitations. Like, I am kind of in search for the perfect chocolate chip cookie and love them. But as soon as that becomes like the defining thing that I think is going to make my life perfect, that's not a real like aspiring ideal that we're going after. So getting too attached to like things like the latest, greatest YouTube channel or video games or things that are fun and good, I mean, like chocolate chip cookies, we get messages that those are where we can find our happiness. But we're going to try to move away from those shortcuts, because that is not the life that we are promised and that we can live. And also, the thing that happens here, if you do the if only thing, if only I had done this or chosen that different career path, or if only I was friends with so-and-so, or if only I was better at tennis, or if only, or we point at other people, if only those people would understand climate change better, or if only those other people would chill out a little bit, then we would live in Blissfultopia. And we can't control all those things. And so again, we are stuck here because we get messages that even though our real is like we're having a hard time, we're supposed to measure up to these things. And what are some words about this spot from out there? Like, what is this like here? What words come to mind? I think of like denial, maybe.
Impossible.
Impossible. It's impossible. Bottom line.
Ignorance is bliss.
Ignorance is bliss. Yes.
Perfectionism.
Perfectionism. Snoop Dogg has done some really fun Olympic highlight messages, I have to say. So, you know, I think of like Simone Biles, speaking of the Olympics, who is we kind of want her to be everything. We want her to be like the best gymnast in the world and super emotionally balanced and a leader of racial equity and also survivors of abuse and eloquent and steady and, you know, like a full whole person. That's not realistic, right? And Simone is a really good example of becoming kind of aware of those unhealthy ideals and unhealthy reels that we do to ourselves. So the problem with these, you kind of have already kind of gotten to be naming it, is just how we stop seeing so many things that we would do really well to see. So many things that are really true about us and other people, real things that they're dealing with and that we are dealing with. And also, we get blind to what could be. It could be so much different or more than we see. And the other problem is just how stuck these spots are. If I'm trying to be Simone Biles, I'm in trouble, right? Like, I'm not gonna go anywhere with that. So I'm gonna have you play a game at your tables now to start taking this another step. And this is called Fortunately and Unfortunately. And if Jesse, Maya, Heidi could come up, we'll just give a quick example for you. This is a fun game, no worries, you're gonna be able to do it no problem. So I went to the zoo and got some ice cream. Fortunately, they had my favorite flavor of strawberry.
Unfortunately, the hippopotamus ate my ice cream.
Fortunately, the hippopotamus was really cute.
Unfortunately, he was squashed by a bus.
You got it? You got it. Okay. So at your table, there's some slips of paper in the basket, and you can take one out, and that will be your prompt. And so go back and forth, fortunately, unfortunately. And I'm going to switch it up on you in a minute, but go ahead and get started. Have some fun with this. Unfortunate spirals and a crazy unfortunate.
We died four times.
Fortunate, oh my gosh, you died four times. So like this is kind of what we do in our heads, right? Do your heads ever go in those crazy spirally places?
Yeah.
In either direction?
No.
If they don't, I want to like follow you everywhere and find out your secret. So that's a good example of what our heads do, but it's also a good example that we can actually like notice and choose a thought, right? So that gives me some hope. Like we can notice our thoughts and choose a different thought. So I want to welcome Jesse up here. Jesse Berg, thank you for being here. Jesse is a mom and a bunch of wonderful things and a social worker and is up here mostly as a human today to help us unpack a little bit more of this idea. So thank you, Jesse. I remember there was a Facebook post about March 2020 from you.
Seems like a long time ago and not that long ago.
tell us about that post, because that's kind of why I thought of you for this.
Okay. And I'll kind of get into a longer story, but March of 2020, I got COVID, and I got COVID about a week after the state shut down, and it came really hard and it came really fast. I have never been that sick in my life, and I'm not telling you to scare you, I'm just explaining it. And prior to that, I was very healthy. I was very active, I exercised, I ate generally well. I was a go-getter and a mover. And I was laid out for about 2 weeks on the couch, pretty much, with the exception of a couple hours here and there, and just really did not feel well at all. And I remember during that time, I read an article or something in the news about the COVID cases were jumping up in Minnesota at that point. And they were saying, like, we've had X number of cases this week. And I remember thinking at the time, like, well, this isn't accurate, because at that time there were tests were very limitedly available. So, like, if you were a healthcare worker, you could get a test. I could not get a test. I had three doctors screen me virtually telling me I had it, but my case would not be documented somewhere as a positive case. And I was also aware of at least five other individuals in similar situations who were at home navigating it and with presumed cases, but that weren't noted as a positive case. Obviously, most of the public knew that this was the situation, but I kind of wanted to bring awareness to this. And I'm not a big social media person. I like to keep it light, but to me, I felt like this was something I just wanted people to know. Like, this hit home really fast at our house, and it hit really hard, and I did not really want anyone to get sick like I got sick. So I posted this article, and I just said, like, this is true. These numbers are here, and these are real, but it's actually very likely a lot more. And I did everything right up to this point, and I got it. So please be careful. So I just wanted to make it kind of real for people, I guess.
Yeah, so you were, like, not wanting to go to either end, right? No blissful utopia, no worryopolis.
Just reality.
Trying to get to a healthier, more helpful. Okay. Yeah, and I really appreciated that at the time, I can say, because that was a really scary time. And I thought about those posts as I was thinking about this idea, and also a text string that we had a little bit later after a Fabric podcast about joy. And you had sent me this article and some thoughts about how this idea of tragic optimism is kind of a good corrective to the toxic positivity that people were kind of feeling going on out there.
Yeah.
So anyway, I really thought, like, that is the space we're talking about, this healthy middle space. I think we got a couple more chairs coming up from our stagehands. And this is the space we want to live in. Thank you, guys. So these are the healthy reels and ideals that we want to start talking about. So the healthy real over there, we're not denying things. We're being brave. We're saying, hey, this is hard, and I can do it. It's an honest place. It's a vulnerable place. It's a place where it is okay to not be okay. As Naomi Osaka, the tennis player, said, as Simone Biles is modeling for us. And it's just this place where we might not get trapped in regret, but we might feel a little guilt. We might think, oh, I did make a choice that wasn't the best. But it doesn't turn into shame in this healthy place. It's not about who we are, but we make mistakes, and we need to look at those, honestly. So that's kind of this healthy, what we're talking about here. So can you relate to that?
Yes. I remember that text thread we had in Tragic Optimism. Full disclosure, as I told you, I'm an eternal optimist, but I always put the caveat that I'm also a realist. I don't deny that there are hard things in life, but I'm a firm believer in hope and moving forward. So tragic optimism is kind of a place I like to hang out, and that was from Viktor Frankl and Man's Search for Meaning, which I highly recommend. So after I had COVID, at that time, there was generally this view that if you had it, you were one, either in the hospital and super sick and you might have lingering issues, or two, you were sick at home for a week or two and then you'd get better and move forward with life. So that was the attitude I was going with. I was sick at home and I would get better. And I did start to get better. I had a few weeks where my energy was coming back. I was starting to run again. I was a runner regularly beforehand. I was getting through the day pretty normally, and I was feeling good, and I was moving in the right trajectory. And then about 3 weeks later, I got hit really hard again, and it wasn't anything like the first time, but there were some similarities, and it was things that were symptoms and feelings that I had never had prior to COVID. I was getting really fatigued. I was having brain fog. Like, I couldn't think. Like, clearly I would wear out mentally. I would lose my appetite again. I'd get a sore throat. My lungs would burn. And I started getting shortness of breath. So I was having these symptoms that would come up, but they were mild, but they were there. So I was reaching out to my doctor, and my doctor, due to shortness of breath, was like, go to urgent care and make sure you're okay. I went to urgent care and everything checked out fine, and I was sent back home again. There were no answers, and it was like, you're probably still recovering. Maybe there's some pneumonia lingering. Take these antibiotics and you'll be okay. And so I was like, okay, we'll see.
And this is really early on.
This is really early on. So, like, people didn't know that long COVID was a thing when this was happening to me. So it was still the view I would get better and be okay. And then I started to get better again for a few weeks. And I was like, all right, we're moving in the right direction again. And then after a few weeks, I got hit again. And I would get knocked down and I would get wiped out. I couldn't do things that I normally did very easily, like going for a run. Or I would get really worn out in ways that I never got worn out before. And not like tired, like exhausted. I describe it as trying to function with a parking brake on. My body just wants to lie down. And so eventually I started to see things about people who were experiencing similar situations as me online, and it was mostly out of the UK because they were about a month ahead of us in the pandemic. And I started sending these to my doctor, and I was like, this is what's happening. This is how I feel. This is what I'm experiencing. And they really had no explanation still. And I went and did a bunch of tests. But then finally there was some validation of, I believe this is what you're having.
So tell us how your motto kind of changed.
Yes. So my motto for the first 6 months was, I'm going to kick COVID's butt. Full disclaimer, I think I might have used a different word. But that was what it was going to be, and I was going to push through, and I was going to get better, and I was going to be back to my pre-COVID self and living life normally. After about 6 months, I had to switch gears because I was getting very discouraged whenever I had a flare-up that I wasn't getting back to this ideal. And I switched it to, I'm not going to let COVID kick my butt. And that's where kind of there was a shift in my process.
So from, I'm going to kick COVID's butt, which had become here.
Which was unhealthy.
Yeah. To say that second motto again.
I won't let COVID kick my butt.
Cool. Okay. That's a good shift. So I think that brings us into this place. Can you slide that one over? So you're being honest. I'm not going to probably kick this and go back to normal. Mm-hmm. And I have some power here. So the healthy ideal place is a place where we conceive what's possible, even given the circumstances. So that's what this place is. And maybe there's even, in some situations, like I don't know if yours is true, but like we can feel some excitement there. And we can see like, okay, this is hard, but I get to do this. Like, this is good. I'm not perfect, but I'm kind of in my lane. So that's a great feeling. And these are the two places where we can try to live a little more. Did you ever have that sense of excitement? I can't imagine.
Well, sometimes when I was trying new things, like therapies and stuff, but then I'd get discouraged. But definitely hope. And hope is there. And so this switch in mentality to me is was giving control. I'm a firm believer in perspective and attitude and how you're going to go about life. I'm also, as you mentioned, a social worker. So I validate, like, I totally believe in meeting people where they're at and honoring how they feel, and they suck sometimes and they're hard and they're horrible, but how can we move forward, because that's not a good place to stay.
Yeah, that's something we talked about in our tech stream, because I tend to be less the eternal optimist and more like a melancholy, like aware of how people are, how harm is happening, and there's suffering that goes unseen, and how lonely that would be. And I think it's a good part of me, but it's also a trap, right? And it can become toxic for me and the people around me. And so it was really helpful to talk about that a little bit.
And I feel like that's where tragic optimism comes in, because you can be in really bad spots, but you can still work to move forward.
So tell us, like, when people would ask you how you're doing.
So sometimes you don't want to dwell in the negativity. You don't want to be there. It's there and you can honor it, but you don't always want to talk about it. And so there were times where I would feel good and, like, I'd have a good day, because I do. I have good days. I don't want to make it sound like it's actually horrible. And I would whisper to my husband, George, I'm feeling good today, but we're not going to talk about it, and we're just going to move on. And because I didn't want to jinx it. I didn't want to dwell on it. I just wanted to live in the moment.
I love that. I think it is, like, so easy to not see that you might get better, or when we feel down or dark, like, to not see that there's any other way I could be, or any options or any way forward. But when we can be acknowledged and acknowledge, like, that real stuff, but not just the real stuff, also, like, what we're part of. We're part of something bigger than ourselves. We're not in this alone. And I feel like you kind of modeled how we're part of this bigger fabric, like your doctors and your caregivers and your family and whatever, like, was giving you hope. You're a prayer. I know that was helping you, and asking other people to be with you in that. Like Simone Biles has modeled that for us. Like, there is life beyond being a gymnast, a champion gymnast. Like, I am more than that.
Yes. And I am more than someone who's had COVID. There's way more to my life than that. It is just one little piece of it. And I got to hold on to all that other stuff.
Yeah. So I love your idea. Like, you talk a lot about hope.
Yes.
And I think when we think about the words hope and honesty, point to the chair where you think hope lives up here. Somewhere over here, yeah. So I would suggest that hope actually doesn't live in that chair over there.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. So, because hope that isn't honest, I would call that, like, wishful thinking, right? It's not actually hope. But then if you have honesty, like, without any hope, I don't know what that's called, but it is something we choose sometimes. We're like, let's dwell in the circumstances.
Pessimism.
Maybe that's a good word. But real, like, if we're going to be honest, I think it's a leap of faith. Like, that's why we gather and talk about things that are a little below the surface, because we might be part of a big cosmic joke, but I think there's something inside us and around us that says, no, we're part of something bigger and loving, that we can actually, it's okay to be honest about our foibles, and it's okay to be honest about the realities, and we can find hope there, because we're part of something so much bigger. We're part of this fabric, and we have power together and power in us that we're not aware of all by ourselves. But we do forget. Like yesterday, sometimes do you ever feel like the problems are too big? You can't do anything about it. Your problems are the world. And our friend Carla from Fabric texted me yesterday saying, if you think you're too small to make a difference, you've never been in bed with a mosquito. And it was just this perspective, like, oh, yeah, small things, they can make a difference. She's right. So, but we just need help having the eyes sometimes to see, So we're going to be practicing that here today. Tell us quick about your book, though.
Yes.
Like, that's so good.
So, we had been texting kind of about this tragic optimism and stuff, and beyond my story, like, just this last year and a half, we can all agree, has been pretty heavy in so many different ways, whether it's the pandemic, whether it's just unrest in the world, politics, media, whatever. And so I often try to find a positive way to move forward because I feel negative.
Like, how do we think about this?
Yes. And so I heard this guy, Bishop Michael Curry, and he was speaking on PBS. And apparently he did Harry and Meghan's wedding, but I didn't really care about that detail. But he was, like, infectious to talk, like, to listen to. His view of hope and his smile and his attitude on life was like, we need more people like this guy. And so I went out and bought his book, Love is the Way, Holding On to Hope in Troubling Times. And it was just his view of, like, the world sometimes can feel like it's coming down and you're really, really in this unhealthy zone, but there is always a way to move forward. Sometimes you might not see it and you might not know it. But
without being like Pollyanna ignoring it.
Yeah. There's reality. You got to honor that. But you can still move forward. And so it was a great book. I highly recommend it.
So one of the things, like, I listened to the interview with him, and he said, I have to kneel and stand at the same time. So I think that reminds me of that honesty, like kneeling and being honest about the realities that are going on. Maybe that's kind of like saying you're sorry to yourself or someone else. And then you also can stand, because we're so much more than our mistakes. So we kneel, we stand. I love that image. So how are you doing now, Jesse?
I'm doing just okay, new normal, but I'm getting through it. I have flare-ups from time to time, but I can control it a lot more and manage it and finding my new group. And I have amazing support, and I'm very, very thankful for that in all different ways.
Thank you for giving us a glimpse of this very complicated long journey, and we're with you.
Yes.
Continue.
Thank you
for being with us, too, in all the things. So we can think all this in our heads and talk all the words. Sorry, I've been doing a lot of talking. And how do we integrate it? Like, how do you go home and be like, I don't want to fall into Blissfultopia and Worryopolis. I want to be in that healthy place, but how do I do this? We're going to practice, and we're going to use some fun, a game, and we're going to need some help from all of you, because we know that, like, when you played Fortunately Unfortunately, it was easy to choose, maybe easy to choose your thoughts there, but when you're in the thick of it, of life, it's a lot harder. So we need to practice. That's what we're going
to
do.
Here, Melissa offered a game where the volunteers would try to follow someone else,
right,
or to stay in front of that person to get their attention, much like our own thoughts might.
Nice. All right, everyone, give them a round of applause. So think of those as your thoughts, right? Do you ever have thoughts that sort of follow you around everywhere and you don't even know, like, why am I so crabby? And you think, oh, it's because of that thing that happened, like, 6 hours ago, and I'm still feeling crabby, even though my family had nothing to do with it. But, like, it's coming at me from behind, this thought, and it's just really present. Or do you ever have thoughts that are just habitual, and they're always in your face, and you try to get them out, like, oh, this is so hard, or I am not good at math, or I am not fill in the blank enough. You know, those are the ones that, like, we have sort of thought patterns, and they get in our face all the time. So that's what, at camp, I thought this was really, like, an important thing that the kids talked about and that we can learn as adults. In fact, Claudia, one of the campers, said, Moms, you need to know this. You need to know that we're thinking about this. So when you get those strong, sticky thoughts that are just not helpful, can you guys all think of, like, you don't have to tell anyone, but think of a common one for you, like, that just feels really unhelpful, a thought that comes at you from behind or in front, and how it can just take over. So think of those thoughts and how they feel like they're just in your face all the time. And the fact that you have these thoughts, I'm going to call it your first thought, like,
that's not because you're broken. It's just because you're a human. Like, we're all humans in this. So we have this first thought that gets in our faces. But how can we do that thing where we create distance? How can we, like, create some different distance? So that's what I'm hoping you can leave with some answers to that this morning. Like, how can I create distance so that I can see what thought I'm having and not judge it, but observe it, and maybe see some other options, some other ideas that could be my second thought. And then maybe you get like a third thought or a fourth thought. Like, we get a lot of chances to keep re-choosing our thoughts. So that's what I hope we can leave with some ideas for. And you have some paper at your tables, and I wonder if you can think together at your table. Like, what are things that help me create distance between those first thoughts so I can look at them and see them? I'm going to give you just a quick couple minutes to talk about some ideas and actually write them on the table so that we can walk around after and get other ideas from other people. So let's check around the room. Like, right now, is there one idea from this side of the room over here? A couple ideas that you see. Two ideas from this side of the room to shout out. Way back there, did you have any from your table, Kennedy's? Any ideas that you would shout out, or Heidi's table? Breathing. Thank you. Any others? Or one more on this side. Mateo and Callie, did you have any there? I heard, like, any ideas that help you that you could just share with the room?
Not briefly.
Not briefly. All right. So breathing. Do you have an idea about creating distance? With your thoughts, yeah. So taking a big breath, or using your friends.
Cutting out the party, cutting out and replanting the barbecue brain with a new friend that has nothing to think about, your brain that has much to think about. Procedures,
habits, practices, anything on this side? One more.
Watching something funny.
Watching something funny. Okay. So,
cleaning,
having some control. All right, so before we go, if you have one of those pesky thoughts, I want you to bring your hands up to your face and whisper that thought into your hand, okay? Whisper that pesky thought, and then hold on to it there. And maybe try to pull it out away from you a little bit and say, hello. I know you are familiar to me, but you're not all I'm going to see here. I am part of a bigger picture, and so this can help us remember that together. And this really takes some practice. Our friend Joe Davis says, we do best what we do most. So if we can get distance from those thoughts that we're always practicing and choose some different ones and practice them, this can change things. I have not seen Luca yet. But there's another idea in there that you can take with you to practice.
I can get a room. Silencio Bruno.
Silencio Bruno.
Silencio Bruno.
Silencio Bruno.
Can you still hear it?
No, just you.
Good. Hey,
Silencio Bruno.
Silencio Bruno.
Silencio Bruno.
So, I wanted to have everyone just yell that, but what's the thing that they did in Japan, Maya?
Scream inside your heart!
Scream inside your heart, or whisper scream, whisper yell at your common thought. Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Silencio Bruno.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for being such good sports this morning. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening. We hope this conversation continues in your life. You can find other Fabric folks through our social media accounts at FabricMPLS, or find resources for discussions with smaller groups, family, and friends on our website. We also have live gatherings in the Twin Cities we'd love for you to be part of. Learn more at fabricmpls.com.